Listen up, football fans. You won't want to miss this.
Right now, new Bet365 customers bet $5 and get $200 in bonus bets, win or lose. So you could turn that $200 into something bigger when you bet on Moneyline, spread, totals, player props.
$200 in bonus bets when new customers bet $5. I know where I'm going to bet from now on. Download the app today and see why it's never ordinary at Bet365. Gambling problem? Call 1-800-GAMBLER. 21 plus only. Must be physically located in Ohio. T&Cs apply. In app only.
This episode is brought to you by Progressive Insurance. What if comparing car insurance rates was as easy as putting on your favorite podcast? With Progressive, it is. Just visit the Progressive website to quote with all the coverages you want. You'll see Progressive's direct rate, then their tool will provide options from other companies so you can compare. All you need to do is choose the rate and coverage you like. Quote today at progressive.com to join the over 28 million drivers who trust Progressive. Progressive Casualty Insurance Company and Affiliates. Comparison rates not available in all states or situations. Prices vary based on how you buy.
Hi, this is Javon, your Blinds.com design consultant.
Oh, wow, a real person.
Yep, I'm here to help with everything from selecting the perfect window treatments to...
Well, I've got a complicated project.
No problem. We make the complex simple. I can even help schedule a professional measure and install.
I didn't realize you did that.
We can also send you samples fast and free.
Wow, I always thought I needed a designer to come to my home, but scheduling's always a nightmare.
Not with Blinds.com. We're on your schedule, and there's no haggling, pressure, or hidden fees either.
I just might have to do more.
Whatever you need. How about you tell me what you had in mind?
Okay, then. So the first room we're looking at is for guests coming over, and I'm thinking of something.
From free expert design help to our 100% satisfaction guarantee, everything we do is made to fit your life and your windows. Because at Blinds.com, the only thing we treat better than windows is you. Black Friday deals are going on all month long. Save up to 45% off site-wide, plus an additional 10% off every order at Blinds.com. Rules and restrictions apply.
Think advertising on TikTok isn't for your business? Think again.
With TikTok ads, we went from 250,000 downloads to over 1 million downloads in less than a year.
I'm Eve.
I'm Anam, and we're the co-founders of Alinea.
Alinea Invest is an investing app for Gen Z.
We run 50 new ads per week with 3 variations thanks to TikTok Smart Plus campaigns. If you're not advertising on TikTok, you're missing out.
Drive more app downloads only on TikTok. Head over to getstarted.tiktok.com/TikTok ads.
Not a nice day, not necessarily November 17th-ish. I found myself not realizing that Thanksgiving is so close because it's been so warm, but I guess that's the way it goes, right? Here, highs of 77 today. Right now, it's kind of foggy in some areas, 60 degrees. 80 for a high tomorrow, Wednesday, pretty much same thing through Friday. Chance for showers, slight chance on Friday and Saturday and Sunday through Monday, but still highs near 70, and I think it's too early to tell if there's going to be a cold front come Thanksgiving or not. Mike Dettelier joins us now, WWL NFL analyst. Every Monday here at WWL is a Rouse's Football Market, Rouse's Markets Football Monday. Rouse is the official market of the Saints. How you doing, Mike Dettelier?
Well, I watched the Rams in Seattle, and again, the Rams showed up big time. Two really good football teams Sunday. Between them, and Rams able to pull it out, jumped out to a big lead, then Seattle fights back, and then a real defensive game between, you know, the Kansas City Chiefs and the Denver Broncos, and, you know, again, it wasn't a great offensive showing by both teams. And then last night, again, you saw it. Defense dominated the Eagles over the Lions, so all across the board, with the exception of the Buffalo game. Buffalo came out firing. Josh Allen was hot. He had a couple of turnovers, but for the most part, when they needed something, man, the Bills were able to put points up on the board. And you wonder a little bit, Tommy, of what happened with Carolina and Atlanta. Mm-hmm. And I said this last week to you in that game in Berlin. You wonder if the end – you know, they basically wrote the obits for Raheem Morris in Atlanta. And then it wasn't a good outing yesterday. Lose to, I would say, a middle-of-the-road Carolina team who the Saints dominated in that football game. Okay? So mostly what you saw was what you've seen all year long. Defense dominated. You can run the football. You're going to win games. And you're getting that time of year where you wonder a little bit when a coach is in trouble, the team almost senses it, almost goes off like a smoke alarm to them and how they react. That's why I said this during the week, I'd have loved to have played Atlanta Sunday. I would have loved to have played them because you wonder a little bit if they're not cooked.
Well, you don't want – they didn't fire Raheem Morris, did they?
No, they didn't.
No.
But and he's fortunate, too, that Arthur Blank, who in other businesses, okay, he wouldn't have let this go on very long. But he's been very patient with his head coaches for the most part. He's been very patient with them. He hasn't done it yet, but, Tom, you almost, like, feel something has got to be done. Such a disappointment. And then Michael Penix re-injures his knee. He had a bone bruise a couple weeks back where he missed some time. Kirk Cousins came in yesterday and played again. And then, man, there's a lot of things happening and not good in Atlanta.
I don't want Raheem Morris fired this week, though, because I don't want to play a team that's – because then, you know what I'm saying, then you don't know what happens with the new coach and it's a wild card and all of that. Let's just stay with the coach we got in Atlanta for this week at least.
I would think something's got to happen, though, because, it the alarm has went off that this football team, which – every year over the last few years has been about, man, they potentially could be the NFC South winner. That ain't happening this year.
Mm-mm.
Look how many wins they have compared to the Saints. One more.
Yep.
One. And this was a team sort of built to make a run at the Falcons. They gave up a future first-round pick for a pass rusher in James Pierce, who they thought would be maybe the final piece of the puzzle, has not worked. Hasn't.
What are your biggest
Something's going to happen, Tom, I'm telling you.
What are your big surprises in the NFL so far?
Oh, the Colts.
Yeah.
You know, that to me, no one before the season would have predicted to you how good the Colts would be. And Daniel Jones and his impact at quarterback. And they have played lights out. They really have. They've, you know, they've squeezed all the orange vitamin C out of it. They've squeezed
so
it
what
to
is
the
that,
point there's nothing left.
What does that say about a quarterback and the coach or the situation and the team and all of that? Because he didn't do too well in New York, did he?
He was El Lazio. Yeah. He was bad. He was a turnover machine with interceptions or fumbling the football. And they found a way to win. I was talking to Rick Venturi. Rick does, he's sort of their version of Deuce in the booth.
Mm-hmm.
And he was telling me, Mike, it's surprising to me as much as it is to anybody. I would have never thought this from this football team. They've run the football extremely well with Jonathan Taylor. Got a great young tight end who we talked about so much in the offseason, in the spring, and Tyler Warren from Penn State, his impact. But it's been Daniel Jones for them. It really has. He's been outstanding. And then you see the Bears. You wonder a little bit, could Ben Johnson, who had never been a head coach at any level, how would he handle? There's a lot of pressures when you're the head coach in Chicago. Okay? You're coming under a lot of scrutiny. You have Caleb Williams, who's the first overall pick in a draft a couple years back. Could you piece it together? And they found a way to win. Sometimes it's ugly, but it's a W.
It's still
That's
seven,
all I'm worried about.
7-3. We'll take a break. Pick it up, Mike Tatilia, and we come back. 504-260-1870. If you got any questions or comments about the NFL or about the Saints, we will get to the Saints. I promise you that. Traffic now, WWL. 626 and a half, Tommy Tucker, WWL. Every Monday is a Rouse's Football Mucket. Football Monday, Rouse is the official Super Bowl. I'll get it straight, Mike. It's Monday morning. I was up all night worried about my phone, but I'll get it together here in a little bit. Rouse's, the official supermarket of the Saints. Mike was talking about some of the surprises in the NFL. How about those Denver Broncos and Sean Payton?
Yeah, it was. It's all of a rollover from what we saw last year. Great defensive team. Man, they man, they converge on the football so quickly. They're superb in the red zone. They squeeze you to, if you get down there, you can most of the time kick field goals. Their offense, Bo Nix has not played like I think Sean Payton would have wanted him to. And they're sort of beat up in the backfield. But, man, they make plays when they have to. But they win because of their defense. And Vance Joseph, you know, a guy here from Louisiana, he's doing a fantastic job directing that defense.
I'm sure.
Yeah, because people think, you know, when you're the head coach, you know everything, and you don't, okay? You have one side of the ball you're really, really familiar with. And then you've got to turn the, you know, that other side over to someone else. And he's done that with Vance Joseph. Vance done a fantastic job coaching that defense. And it's about putting people in the right place to get the most out of them. I think that's what coaching is all about, is finding the right spot for your players. And Vance has been able to do that. And,
but I would take a step back, Mike, and I would say even about a coach finding the right spot for his coach, because it's not often that you have the head coach of the team, a former head coach of the same team, come back as a defensive coordinator. And Sean Payton, and look, I'm not happy Sean Payton left, but I understand things happen. He had to make Vance Joseph feel comfortable enough to be there as the defensive coordinator, right? And you understand what I'm saying? That had to be a weird dynamic at first. Yeah.
It's unique, to say the least. But I think, Tommy, in the commuter world of coaching, which we are in the midst of it now, you're going to see this at the college and pro level. That is a unique spot where you were a head coach and then fired and then come back as an assistant. But I do think in the kind of how you get on a plane and you're a coach here and a coach there, that's going to happen a little bit more than maybe we've seen in the past, which really happened really not at all until recent years.
Mm-hmm. Let me ask you about the Kansas City Chiefs. What's going on there?
Can't run the ball. Their defense, you know, Steve Spagnuolo, again, I thought he did a really good job. Defensively, they gave up some big plays. Tommy, they one-dimensional. They hang their hat on Pat Mahomes throwing the football. And, you know, sometimes it's there and sometimes it's not. But their offensive line issues have really shown up big this year. Look at all the penalties in that game. Oh, my God, like every play. There was a procedure or a motion penalty up front along the offensive line that's not gelled, and they can't run the ball worth a lick.
I've not seen them look sharp the entire season. Have you?
Nope, not at all. And I then mean, they might struggle to get into the playoffs as a wild card.
Because it seems like, you know, yesterday Mahomes has his big throw, hits a guy right in the hands, drops it. Boom. Chance for a big play, doesn't happen.
There's a lot of things going wrong that went right for them over the last 5 years.
There you go. Maybe it's evening up now. 6:30 more with Mike. When we come back, we'll talk Saints. Right now, time for WWL First News. For that, we go to Ian Ozan. 6:46, 14 till 7. Tommy Tucker, WWL with Mike Dettelier. Mike, no Saints game yesterday, but you guys are still second-guessing this evening, eh?
Yep. We'll be at the Silver Slipper Casino beachside in Hancock County, Mississippi. Bobby's back, I think, from Chicago, and so we'll be there from 4 to 6:30, and then it'll be our Visit Pensacola Saints Coaches Show with Mike Hoss and Kellen Moore, and I think the coach tonight, I think it's Jay Clark, who is the edges coach. He coaches the outside linebackers, pass rushers for the Saints.
And then they'll talk about the NFC South as well. Mike Hoss and Mike Dettelier will. And then at 7:30 and catch Monday Night Football, Cowboys at Raiders on WWO 105.3 FM and the free Odyssey app. You can hear Pelicans basketball, Pels versus Oklahoma Thunder, 7 p.m. tip on the Big 870 WWL. Mike, let's talk about the Saints and coming back from the bye week. What do you expect to see from them?
I think one of the things you want to work on is to put a little bit more light in what Tyler Shuck does best for you on offense. And I've always felt from watching him in college and, you know, the little bit we got to see of him in two games, and that's a really small sample size. Mm-hmm. But he's always been good in the medium to long range passing areas of the field. That's a little opposite of how you had your offense built before under Spencer Rattler. And Spencer's strong point was in the short to intermediate part of the field. So you trying to expand upon that with Shuck, and that's basically stretching the rubber band offensively, trying to get the ball a little bit deeper downfield. The other thing, too, is making sure Alvin Kamara is still a huge part of your game plan. As a receiver coming out of the backfield and also in the running game. And I just think that is what you've got to see more of when you go down the stretch against teams like Atlanta, not only once but twice, mm-hmm. the Panthers again, the Jets, the Titans, the Buccaneers. You want to see more of that with a different style quarterback than what you've seen other than the last two games, and that is to expand your offense that way. That's what you have to do. And this game is not about plays, players. Putting your players in the best position to make a play. Mm-hmm. And that's what you've got to do better for Tyler Shuck, because I'm just telling you, got a couple game films on him. They're going to try to take away some of the things you saw the first two games. You better be able to football chess with other teams.
I'm going to tell you something, and you can comment on this when we come back, all right? And this is just something that's running through my mind. And here we are. It's like the start of a new season almost after the bye week in a way, okay? But in terms of injuries, the Saints have been relatively lucky, right? Other than the offensive line, a couple of injuries there?
Losing Eric McCoy was a big loss. No question about that. And then early on, Julian Blackman. And I think that if you go back to training camp and even into the preseason, he was the most impressive defensive back they had. And you lost him. You were forced to play Jonas Sanker, the rookie. So
who's not played badly.
Relatively healthy. So the running back at the position.
So here's the scenario I'm going to pitch to you. You can comment when we come back. Not now. When we come back, you got Atlanta, Miami, Tampa Bay, who might be ripe for an upset. Carolina, the Jets, the woeful Tennessee Titans, and Atlanta again. Maybe Tyler Shuck gets hot. Maybe they go ahead and win the next seven games, and maybe they finish 9-8 maybe? What a surprise that would be, huh? We'll talk about the possibility of that when we come back with Mike Dettillier. 6:50, 10 till 7, traffic now, WWL. 6:56, Tommy Tucker, WWL, 4 till 7. I have the survey going. It would be impossible for you to get through your workday without your blank, and somebody text in without the foolish optimism of Tommy Tucker. So that's Mike Dettillier, who is our guest, after my comment before the break about the Saints going on a streak here and winning seven games. But I'm just saying, you got Atlanta twice, you got Carolina again, you got Miami, who's not having a great season, Tennessee, Lord help them, the Jets, they've won two games. Carolina again, I don't know if I mentioned that or not. Maybe Tampa Bay might be ripe for an upset at that point. Saints, tell me your thoughts on my foolish optimism.
Yeah, Tommy, you got to go through the ups and downs.
I wouldn't bet it now, to be clear.
No,
I would not bet this.
Neither would I, even close.
Yeah.
But I think the key down the stretch here, and certainly the development of Tyler Shuck is important, but this team has had difficulty stopping the run. They did against Carolina. Can that continue? Mm-hmm. And the other part, too, is running the ball. You got to show commitment to running the football. So while I want to see continued development in Shuck, I think the keys here for this football team to help your young quarterback and to help your football team, hey, stop the run and run the ball.
Yep.
Hey, it's old-fashioned, but it works. look what's going on all across the NFL. Okay, it's not about these 400-yard passers. Yesterday was an anomaly. Bryce Young, who was flat-out bad against the Saints, look what he did against Atlanta. Look the numbers that Bryce Young put up against the Falcons. They didn't really run the football really well, and they were able to come out with a W, but that's an anomaly. I do think down the stretch,
but
the key for this football team, running the ball, stopping the run, because it really does help your young quarterback.
Let me just say this.
A lot more than you might think.
Let me just say this. Atlanta in a state of disarray. We started by talking about that. We began the season saying it's hard to bet on how many games the team's going to win because it all depends when you play them, and it all depends on injuries, right? And it all depends what situation they happen to be in. And I'm just looking at the way the schedule sets up, the rest of the schedule. Saints being relatively healthy with injuries, and other teams perhaps not so much. Atlanta losing their quarterback. We play them twice. I'm just saying I'm not ready to jump out the window like I was earlier in the season. Not yet.
Yeah, and what you can't do without for me, it's a vehicle. Okay,
vehicle.
Mondays I go to Mississippi. Tuesdays I'm on television in Houma. Thursdays I'm at Treasure Chest in Kenner. I'm doing remotes, talks. Saturdays I'm at Acme Oyster House in Baton Rouge. Sunday game day in New Orleans. For me, the one thing I can't do without, a vehicle this time of year.
You're like a traveling salesman, Mike. Thank you. I appreciate
Pretty
your time.
Cool. Thank you, brother.
You bet. We'll listen this afternoon as you second guest live on the beach. Silver Slipper Casino starts at 4. Bobby Abe will be back at 6:30. It's a Visit Pensacola Saints coaches show with Mike Haas and the Cajun Cannon, Kellen Moore. Then Edge's coach says here, Jay Rogers, Cowboys Raiders tonight. Then you got the Pels and the Thunder. We'll be back talking LSU. 7:14 now on this Monday morning, November 17th, about what, 10 days till Thanksgiving, but it just doesn't seem like it. I don't know if it's because of the football fortunes of the local teams or not. Jeff Palermo joins us now, WWL.com columnist, Louisiana Network News Director. Every Monday here at WWL is a Rouse's Football Monday. Rouse's, the official supermarket of LSU football. How you doing, Jeff?
Hey, I'm doing well, Tommy. How about yourself?
I'm all right, sir. Tell me your thoughts on the game, and then I'll ask you some questions.
Well, I think you got to give LSU a lot of credit. You know, being down 14-0 to come back like that when it was probably it had to be very easy just to sit there and say, you know what, this isn't our day, this isn't our season. Let's just kind of go through the emotions here.
That's what I thought was going to happen, Jeff. I swear to goodness, that's exactly what I thought was going to happen as I was watching it.
But, I think you got to give a lot of credit to Frank Wilson and the rest of the coaching staff because Frank is out there trying to win, and so is the rest of this coaching staff. They haven't given up on the season. They still feel like there's things to be accomplished here and wins to get, and it was important to them. It was important to get a win in Tiger Stadium against an SEC opponent. And, I thought the defense came up big. Obviously, the goal line stand, the interception right before halftime, and then going down the field and getting 3 points out of that. And then Arkansas helped them out too, right? I mean, on Arkansas's opening drive, they're just marching down the field against LSU, and they just fumble the ball going into the red zone, and that interception that Green threw to that Montsor Delane intercepted, just bad communication between him and the receiver. Can't punch it in once they got it inside the five. There's a reason why Arkansas has lost, what now, five games, I believe it is, five games within 6 points. They did a lot of things losing teams do, and LSU took advantage of it. And then, Michael Van Buren shakes off the slow start, and they I thought he performed well. And then I think the other thing that you dive into the box score, they actually ran the ball 37 times to 33 passes. Mm-hmm. They were actually committed to the ground game. Now, they really had to be in the fourth quarter when they were trying to run out the clock, but still, I thought that those were all really positive signs.
Whenever you see those numbers in a box score, generally speaking, it's going to bode well for the team that wins the game, especially if you overcome a blocked punt for a touchdown.
Yeah, you know, and I think, like, the percentage, like, if you give up a special teams touchdown, the percentage is you're going to lose 75% of the time. Mm-hmm. And so you basically gave them free 7 points there. But, again, they bounced back, and they stuck with it because it could have gotten really ugly there in Tiger Stadium if Arkansas – just kind of ran away and hid, and it really would have been a very depressing scene in the second half. But they fought. They fought really hard, and I think considering everything they've been through, and I know it's been a very difficult 2-3 weeks here for the fan base, I think for alumni and everyone, to see that team just kind of figure out a way. And then what Frank Wilson said after the game, he told them, you're going to get hit with adversity. You don't know what it is, but it's how you respond to that adversity. And they responded to adversity very, very well.
What was the crowd like?
Well, it was. I don't want to say it had a spring game feel to it, but in a sense, in a way, it did. Right? It's an afternoon game. It's a game that really means absolutely nothing in the grand scheme of things, and. It was kind of a laid-back crowd. Got very loud, though, when Arkansas was trying on that goal line stand that LSU had defensively. Mm-hmm. And I think it was just a fan base that was there to just kind of check things out. And they weren't going to get very emotionally involved in the game. But they did because in the second half, when LSU really – when it was there for LSU to win the football game – you know, I think the fan base really responded at that point and, got into it a lot more in the second half than they did in the first half.
I'm laughing at they didn't want to get emotionally involved because it's almost kind of like, I don't care what you do. I don't care. I'm not getting upset. I don't care.
Well, I think also it has just been a whirlwind here, right? Mm-hmm. I mean, since the last time they were in Tiger Stadium, when you consider everything that's been happened, I think as a fan base, you're just kind of spent over everything that's occurring. And then, again, kind of what we talked about, I think, last week, Tommy, in that, this game will be long forgotten when the new coach mm-hmm. arrives in Baton Rouge.
Yeah.
And I think really trying to figure out if Michael Van Buren should be part of the future or not. And, again, the next coach will make that determination. And we'll see how many more starts that Van Buren will get. But, for him, he's trying to put enough work on tape here that the next coach will say, okay, I kind of like what I see out of Michael Van Buren, and this might potentially be my guy. But I still think whoever they bring in here, they are or whoever the new coach is, he's going to go out and try to find find somebody to compete with Michael Van Buren.
That's another thought I had as I was watching the game. It's like, well, really, you talk about a spring game, but it's like, well, we don't really know who the coach is going to be. We don't know who the players are going to be. We don't know who the quarterback's going to be. So let's just enjoy the moment while we can. 7:20, quick break. More with Jeff Palermo when we come back. Traffic now, WWL. It is 7:26 every Monday here at WWL is a Rouse's Football Monday. Rouse's the official supermarket of LSU. Jeff Palermo joins us, WWL.com columnist, Louisiana.
Listen up, football fans. You won't want to miss this.
Right now, new Bet365 customers bet $5 and get $200 in bonus bets, win or lose. So you could turn that $200 into something bigger when you bet on Moneyline, spread, totals, player props.
$200 in bonus bets when new customers bet $5. I know where I'm going to bet from now on. Download the app today and see why it's never ordinary at Bet365. Gambling problem? Call 1-800-GAMBLER. 21 plus only. Must be physically located in Ohio. T&Cs apply. In app only.
Hey, Ryan Reynolds here. Wishing you a very happy half-off holiday because right now Mint Mobile is offering you the gift of 50% off unlimited. To be clear, that's half price, not half the service. And Mint is still premium unlimited wireless for a great price. So that means a half day, yeah? Give it a try at mintmobile.com/switch.
Upfront payment of $45 for 3 month plan equivalent to $15 per month required. New customer offer for first 3 months only. Speeds low after 35 gigabytes of networks busy. Taxes and fees extra. See mintmobile.com.
At Designer Shoe Warehouse, we believe that shoes are an important part of, well,
everything.
From first steps to first dates, from all-nighters to all-time personal bests.
From building pillow forts to building a life.
For all the big and small moments that make up your whole world, DSW is there. And we've got just the shoes. Find a shoe for every you from brands you love at brag-worthy prices at your DSW store or DSW.com.
This episode is brought to you by Progressive. Most of you aren't just listening right now. You're driving, cleaning, and even exercising. But what if you could be saving money by switching to Progressive? Drivers who save by switching save nearly $750 on average. And auto customers qualify for an average of 7 discounts. Multitask right now. Quote today at Progressive.com. Progressive Casualty Insurance Company and Affiliates. National average 12-month savings of $744 by new customers surveyed who saved with Progressive between June 2022 and May 2023. Potential savings will vary. Discounts not available in all states and situations.
At Marisa's, we're all about great jeans. You know, the ones that fit you just right. The ones that go from work days to weekends and everywhere in between. The ones that simply make you feel good. Because you don't just wear jeans, you live in them. With 25 sizes, 5 lengths, and 6 denim brands, you've got options. And fit experts in every store to make jean shopping easier. Find great jeans starting at $29.90 in stores and at Marisa's.com.
The network news director. I'm paraphrasing the national announcers here, that were, or regional announcers, the people who were doing the game on the SEC network, ACC, I don't know what network it was, but it wasn't a big one. And they seemed to indicate that Garrett Nussmeier had checked out for the season. Do we have any indication that that's true or not?
No, there's no truth to that. I mean, I think a lot of people are speculating whether he's tapped out, but I'm going to go with what Frank Wilson told us, he was planning on starting Garrett Nussmeier all week long. He re-aggravates the ab injury on Thursday. And even on Thursday, when Frank Wilson declared Garrett Nussmeier probable, he still had there was a level of concern in his voice. And in fact, he used the word concern. Mm-hmm. And you don't normally, out of all my time watching football and covering teams and where a guy is listed as probable, but yet the coach is still concerned. They're kind of contradictory in a way. Yeah. But again, it was fresh off the injury. Frank Wilson doesn't have all the details at that point. So you kind of knew that maybe there might be a little bit more to this than him just being probable. And the fact that he came out and said something after practice on Thursday, and then you get the news that it was downgraded, and then doubtful, and then eventually to out. So, and then even after the game on Saturday, he still didn't sound very optimistic about if we're going to see Nussmeier. It's going to be something that they'll have to evaluate. We'll hear a little bit more today. I'm sure Nussmeier went in Sunday for treatment, but I don't know, Tommy. I mean, I think fans are going to say what they're going to, are they going to believe what they're going to believe? But I'm not going to be. Maybe I'm naive, but I think guys like Garrett Nussmeier and Whit Weeks, they really want to play.
I do
too. They're just not sitting there to look pretty wearing their jerseys and wearing sweatpants.
The only thing I will say is if they're hurt and they have something that could affect the rest of their career, well, then really, do you want to put it all out there at this point in the season?
Well, I mean, I think there is probably a level of, at this point, I think if you're Nussmeier, you do have to be thinking about yourself in mm-hmm. the sense of, all right, as soon as this season is over with, and again, we don't know if he's going to play in the bowl game or not.
But you can't question his loyalty to the program at all. I don't think you can.
I don't think you can. I mean, this is a guy. Now, granted, NIL plays a factor in this, so it this isn't. But this guy came back to build a legacy here at LSU of a guy that threw for 4,000 yards his first season as a starter, and then his second season as a starter led LSU to a SEC championship and a college football playoff and all these other great things that we thought could potentially be there for the LSU Tigers this year, and they came up way short. So, but I think there is a part of you that does have to start looking ahead and start considering, hey, I got to get ready for the draft here and this and that. But I think the right decision was made. I thought it had actually a little more intrigue that we got to see Michael Van Buren, and we'll see what happens from here on out, Tommy.
If I think I know him as I think I know him, if I know him as I think I know him, then I think he sits out against Western Kentucky. But if he's healthy enough, he's going to take a shot against Oklahoma just to see what he can do. That's what I would guess.
I'm right there with you, Tommy.
Thank you, sir. Appreciate it. Jeff Palermo. We'll talk to Jason Shields, Chief Operating Officer for Gulf Coast Bank and Trust. We come back. Bank on it. Financial insights you can count on right now. Time for WWL First News. For that, we go to Ian Ozan. 7:44, 16 till 7, Monday morning. Tommy Tucker, time to be joined by Jason Shields, Chief Operating Officer for Gulf Coast Bank and Trust. Time for Bank on it. Financial insights you can count on. Good morning, Jason. How are you?
I'm good, Tommy. How are you this morning?
I'm well, sir. I'm interested in today's topic because I've heard a lot about title fraud, how criminals can steal homes without breaking in. And the first question, of course, is how is that possible?
Yeah, Tommy, this is a surprising one, and it doesn't sound real when I talk to people about it. So I figured this would be a good topic going into Thanksgiving for everyone to talk about around the table next week when they're having Thanksgiving food. So
after they get through with politics and religion, right, Jason?
Well, my hopes are that we steer people away from both of those and they'll talk about this instead, right?
I got you. Okay, go ahead.
So it's called title fraud, right? And in essence, what it is it's identity theft for your property. Criminals can actually simply forge some documents and take ownership of your property. And as crazy as that sounds, it is 100% legitimate, right? The criminal will forge either a cash sale or a mortgage release, whatever legal document they need to transfer ownership, and then they get it recorded in the public record. Now, the public record is, of course, public record, which means all of the parishes keep recordations of who owns which property, the instruments that were used to transfer it, and all of that. Anyone can see it. That's the idea behind it. That's a really good thing. But it's also really kind of a bad thing, right? Because if you're a criminal, that's just a treasure trove of information. And so what the criminals do is they go out there and they try to find properties that can easily be moved. And what they target in these types of scams are homes that are paid off or vacant or inherited properties, second homes, basically things that are out there that don't have a lien on them. They're unencumbered, right? That seems like the most financially responsible thing to do is, hey, I paid my house off, or hey, I bought this lot that I'm going to eventually build a house on, but I don't want to have any debt against it, which unfortunately makes you the target for the scammers.
Because otherwise the lending institution's going to get involved, right?
Exactly. Yeah. Exactly. Right. And so that's a really good point, Tommy. And, I kind of want to move on to that one as well, is this is one of those instances where having debt will actually protect you. So the way it works is if you have a mortgage or if you have home equity line of credit, take your pick of whatever those instruments are, right? What happens is those liens against your house will prime those sales. So I'm not telling everyone hey, you should go out there and get debt, right? That's never a good thing. But I've talked to several folks over the years who've just gotten a home equity line of credit, and they just don't use it. They keep it as an insurance policy, let that lien stay on that house, and then that turns them into a non-attractive target because, if this was to happen to you, you absolutely want, a financial institution or someone bigger involved, right? Because obviously a bank is going to want to protect their interest in that property. And the good news is that they legally won't be able to transfer your property. They can file that document, but it won't take effect until the bank says, I would like to cancel your mortgage, right? So that is, I think that's an important one. And I just want to kind of stress that to everyone. But then there's some other things that they can do to protect themselves. And thankfully, the clerks of court have been very active in this space. And they started setting up these alert systems where if anything happens in the public record under your name, you can get an email or a text message and basically act upon it. Now, I affectionately say this is almost like a debit card alert, right? Just because someone's using your debit card, great, I know about it, but it had already happened. And yes, it doesn't necessarily prevent these types of things, but if you know it happened, then that at least lets you act quickly to hopefully get it reversed. So what I want to encourage everyone who's listening to do is go out to your parish's clerk of court, right? All of them have different names for these systems that they put out there. Jefferson Parish calls it Jeff Watch. St. Tammany is Recording Activity Alerts. They give it interesting names. But in essence, what they do, it'll be on their front page and it'll be a thing that says, sign up for property activity alerts or something similar to that. It takes all of about 5 minutes. It's absolutely free. And then once you sign up for that, if any transactions happen involving your name, then you'll get a notification. So what you'll see, some parishes don't necessarily have this set up yet. I think St. Bernard hasn't quite set it up yet. But the good news is there's also a statewide system, Tommy.
Okay.
It's called eClerks Alerts.
So say it again.
I'm going to the website is eClerksLA.com. I'll say that one more time because I think this one's important. eClerksLA.com.
Okay.
Now, same deal. It's free. And when you sign up there, it'll actually cover all 64 parishes statewide. So that's one I encourage everyone to go out there and do. I did it. It takes all of about 3 minutes to sign up for an account, and then you're good to go. You'll get those text notifications. Didn't transfer ownership of my property, but I did sign up so that if something ever happens, I would get an alert.
So I would sign up under what for that, Jason? Under statewide portal, criminal search, what? I see I went to the site to look and sign up for eClerks Alert, I guess is what I want. Yes, that's what I want right there, right?
That is the one you want, yeah.
Gotcha, okay, good. And, very easy to do.
And this is a really good tool, right? Because this is something that has unfortunately ran rampant. So a couple other things that I encourage people to do. Signing up for this is good. You will get, I've heard instances of notifications coming within 15 to 20 minutes of a recordation,
wow,
which is great. You get that notification, you know, you can jump on it and act. But the other things I want to remind people to do, and I'm guilty of this as well, make sure you check your physical mail, right? Because you'll get one of those notices in the mail, perhaps, hey, we've certified your title transfer, whatever it is, right? Mm-hmm. Or anything like that. And you just throw it in the pile and you get to it when you get to it, right? And you know, the Saints aren't playing on Sunday, you decide to go through your mail. And then you find out 6 months ago somebody stole your property.
Or so you think it's some kind of junk mail or some kind of scam, right?
That's it.
Which it is a scam, but you don't realize that the paper that you're receiving is official, which notifies you of a scam, and the paper itself is not the scam. Am I accurate?
100%, Tommy, okay. 100%. And like I said, I'm as guilty of this as anyone else. So, you know, pay attention, but also criminals love mail, unfortunately. It's a great way to get a lot of insight into what people have going on. They can see your credit info and things like that. So I always encourage everyone, just make sure you secure your mail as quickly as possible. So what's the end game of this?
Yeah.
Once criminals steal your property, Tommy, they do one of two things. Either one, they're going to go out there and get a loan against it, or two, they'll actually sell the property, right? Because if there's no lien on that property, they can go out there and sell it. Any title company is going to do a title search. It says Tommy gave Jason his house. He doesn't have any liens on it, and I can go sell it.
Mm-hmm.
And that's as crazy as that sounds. It's legit. Now,
but it's not legal, is it? At some point, your house has been stolen. Can you not prove that?
It is, but let me tell you, Tommy, it is a pain.
Okay.
And that's why signing up for these alerts is critical, because the minute you get one of these alerts, you want to call your parish clerk of court and say, I don't know what this is, but I didn't do it.
Gotcha.
They'll go ahead and flag that thing. Now, if there's a lien that they put against the house, let's just say they went out there and got a mortgage against it or sold, and somebody comes knocking on your door. Yeah, it's not legal, Tommy, but like a lot of things that aren't legal, it takes a while to fix, right?
To fix yourself.
But you're going to need court. You're going to need an attorney, and you got a hush claim on your property and the instrument, any number of things, right? But the good news is if you get one of these alerts and you quickly call your clerk, they'll flag that document because you called up and let's just say call it fraudulent or whatever. And any bank or any title company is going to do a search. If we see something like that on one of the searches, someone's trying to borrow against that property, it's a red flag. And so time is of the essence when people get these alerts to go ahead and act on these things and save themselves a whole lot of heartburn.
You always have great information. Today is very valuable about title theft. You can go to eClerksLA, eClerksLA.com, and sign up for eClerks Alert, and that way you can protect yourself from this because it's a whole lot harder to get out of the hole once you're in it. Right, Jason?
That it is, Tommy.
Thank you, sir. Jason Shields, COO of Gulf Coast Bank and Trust Company. Financial insights you can count on. Count on it. 754, 6 till 8, traffic now, WWL. Got some fog out there. Be careful. It should burn off later on, but it's liable to hit you where you least expect it. So slow down and do be careful. Headlights on, not the bright lights, but headlights on in the fog, please. The nation's most advanced aircraft carrier is in the Caribbean Sea. Display of U.S. military power, but what does that mean for Venezuela, and what does it mean when it comes to narco boats, these little boats that we've been knocking out of the water, and is it akin to having a cannon killing a fly? I don't know. Let's find out as we're joined by David Smile, the professor of sociology at Tulane University, who's studied Venezuela for 30 years, living there for 16. Good morning, Professor. How are you?
Good morning. Thanks for calling.
Tell me, why is the U.S. ramping up military pressure on Venezuela?
Well, it's a good question, because this is being framed as an anti-drug operation, you know, and this is something that Trump, there was a campaign promise of Trump's, and this is indeed a concern of American citizens that if you go to any big urban center, you will see areas in which there are all kinds of people that are under the effects of fentanyl and in the streets, and there's a big problem with overdoses. And so this is being framed as an anti-narcotics campaign, and they are indeed blowing these boats out of the water on the idea that they are bringing drugs to the United States. The problem with this explanation is that Venezuela is not a major player in the drug trade, and it's not even less of a major player in drugs coming to the United States. Less than 10% of the cocaine that comes to the United States comes through Venezuela. Most of the drugs that go through Venezuela go to Europe, and none of the fentanyl, no fentanyl comes from Venezuela. There's no recorded case of fentanyl ever coming from Venezuela. And so it's not really a major player there. So what is this about? Well, I think this is Trump fulfilling a campaign promise. He said he was going to bomb the cartels. This plays well with his base. No, as a country that's sort of a pariah nation, that's just stigmatized after, you know, after the stolen election that we could talk about last year. Mm-hmm. And so I think that is sort of the open or the first justification of it. But I think behind this is also a real desire for regime change. And Marco Rubio is, you know, the Secretary of State, as well as the National Security Advisor for the Trump administration. He has long pushed for regime change in Venezuela. And so this is sort of a repurposing of the war on drugs for a regime change effort in Venezuela.
It would seem like there's a more efficient way. You know, we're all concerned with spending, right? But it would seem like there's a more efficient way than an aircraft carrier to deal with boats that are transporting drugs, if that's your goal. And secondly, it would seem as though that to bring about a regime change, that would be something that would be done internally, perhaps with the CIA and not with an aircraft carrier. That's what confuses me.
Well, yeah. I mean, first of all, there are well-established procedures for drug interdictions. The Coast Guard has been doing this for years, and actually this past year there's been a record number of seizures of drugs. Now, this is all framed in sort of the war on drugs, which we can debate the effectiveness of this, but there are well-established procedures. There's well-established legal reasoning around this. All of what's going on is on very, very dubious legal grounds, suggesting that these drug traffickers or these drug, you know, the pilots of these drug boats are themselves narco-terrorists out to do damage to the United States. The journalists have followed up on some of the boats that have been bombed and their families. And most of these people are fishermen. They were running drugs, but they were doing this for extra cash. These are not terrorists. And so yeah, it's kind of breaks off with that. This is a hugely expensive campaign. I think, you know, mainly it's political theater. It's also to try and scare Nicolas Maduro, to try to get to cause regime change there, try to psych him out, see if they can get him to resign by putting these assets. But I also think, you know, there's also a broader sort of geopolitical context. And what's going on in Venezuela is not isolated. You remember that we started the year with Trump threatening to take over the Panama Canal. You know, he's since sort of reconciled with Panama, but recently he's mixed it up with President Petro in Colombia. No, and now, so this is also being seen beyond Venezuela as sort of a change in U.S. relations in the region. Now, some people are calling this the Monroe Doctrine, you know, which is a play on words, because in the 19th century, we had the Monroe Doctrine, in which the U.S. tried to make sure that the Europeans didn't have influence in our region. Now it's more China that the U.S. is concerned, the Trump administration is concerned about. And so people are trying to interpret this or thinking about this as a new stage in U.S. sort of predominance in the region, and its efforts to make sure that people know that it controls things here. Now, it's also accompanied by positive relations with countries that, you know, support Trump. So Javier Milei of Argentina has got a $20 billion, you know, rescue package for his economy just before some elections. There's also been a very positive relationship with El Salvador, the Trump administration. So he's definitely, you know, focusing a lot on the region. He wants to show sort of strength, be tough with his enemies, and really helpful to his friends. And so we're on a sort of a new stage of geopolitics in the region.
Well, let me take a break. We'll talk about Maduro's stolen election and relations. When we come back, 8:21. We're talking with David Smilday, professor of sociology at Tulane.
Listen up, football fans. You won't want to miss this.
Right now, new Bet365 customers bet $5 and get $200 in bonus bets, win or lose. So you could turn that $200 into something bigger when you bet on Moneyline, spread, totals, player props.
$200 in bonus bets when new customers bet $5. I know where I'm going to bet from now on. Download the app today and see why it's never ordinary at Bet365. Gambling problem? Call 1-800-GAMBLER. 21 plus only. Must be physically located in Ohio. T&Cs apply. In app only.
Hey, Ryan Reynolds here. Wishing you a very happy half-off holiday, because right now Mint Mobile is offering you the gift of 50% off unlimited. To be clear, that's half price, not half the service. And Mint is still premium unlimited wireless for a great price. So that means a half day, yeah? Give it a try at mintmobile.com/switch.
Upfront payment of $45 for 3-month plan equivalent to $15 per month required. New customer offer for first 3 months only. Speeds low after 35 gigabytes of networks busy. Taxes and fees extra. See mintmobile.com.
Ah, DSW, birthplace of the humble brag. Here, the shoes are so good, no one would ever know how little you paid. If you didn't go telling everyone, that is. And with never-ending options for every style, mood, and occasion, all at really great prices, we'll definitely give you something to brag about. So go ahead, stock up on fresh sneakers from your favorite brands. Or try those boots you always secretly knew you could pull off. Find the shoes that get you at prices that get your budget at DSW stores or at DSW.com. Let us surprise you.
This episode is brought to you by Progressive Insurance. What if comparing car insurance rates was as easy as putting on your favorite podcast? With Progressive, it is. Just visit the Progressive website to quote with all the coverages you want. You'll see Progressive's direct rate, then their tool will provide options from other companies so you can compare. All you need to do is choose the rate and coverage you like. Quote today at Progressive.com to join the over 28 million drivers who trust Progressive. Progressive Casualty Insurance Company and Affiliates. Comparison rates not available in all states or situations. Prices vary based on how you buy.
At Marisa's, we're all about great jeans. You know, the ones that fit you just right. The ones that go from work days to weekends and everywhere in between. The ones that simply make you feel good. Because you don't just wear jeans, you live in them. With 25 sizes, 5 lengths, and 6 denim brands, you've got options. And fit experts in every store to make jean shopping easier. Find great jeans starting at $29.90 in stores and at Marisa's.com.
University, studied Venezuela for 30 years, been living there for 16. 8:22, traffic now, WWO. 8:27, Tommy Tucker, WWO. Quickly back to David Smile, professor of sociology at Tulane University, studied Venezuela for 30 years, living there for 16. Tell me about Maduro and the stolen election, if you will, please.
Okay, yeah. So back in 2023, the United States brokered some agreements with Maduro government, basically suggesting that they would go to a democratic election, a fair democratic election. Of course, they broke many of the agreements, but they did end up sort of stumbling their way to a democratic election. And that one of the things that they did that broke the agreement was they disqualified Maria Corina Machado. You might recognize that name because she recently won the Nobel Peace Prize. Mm-hmm. She was the dominant opposition leader and the leader of the polls. They disqualified her from the presidential race, so she got a substitute candidate, which she supported, and that substitute candidate won 70% of the vote. No, the Maduro government did not recognize that election. No, and she basically just said, oh, no, our numbers show that we won the election. It was just a very open fraud that nobody believed. And since then, they've cracked down on opposition. They've cracked down on civil society. Most of the opposition leaders are outside of the country. now, and you have a situation in which you know, people I still maintain contact with in Venezuela, because I haven't been there since that election, you know, say that people don't talk about politics in the street. You know, people, you know, there's a lot of distrust, and it's really difficult economically. People are just basically trying to you know, put food on the table and keep their head down and working and trying to get you know, make a go of it. So it is it's a really bad situation in Venezuela right now with Maduro and with the economy. No, and this stolen election has just really exacerbated it. And this is, you know, one of the things to remember behind all this is what's going on with Venezuelans. I mean, there's a great need for a solution, and it's not just going to come magically from the inside, but it's not going to come magically from the outside either. There needs to be some sort of multilateral effort to try and get Venezuela back on track, rather than just sort of United States trying to be the regional policeman.
Yeah, this is our business. Why? That's what I was going to ask you.
Yeah, well, that's a really good question. Because Venezuela is not, a main drug supplier of the United States. I think you could say geopolitically, Venezuela is an important place for the United States, given its deep oil reserves and mineral wealth. There's that going on. But other than that, all of these stories about Nicolas Maduro controlling the train de Aragua, that they're penetrating the United States. I mean, all of that is really, you know, borderline fiction. I mean, there's always a little grain of truth there, but it's completely blown out of proportion. No, Nicolas Maduro does not control the train de Aragua. They are not invading the United States. There are some Venezuelan immigrants that have caused, got involved in crime. But we know over the years, statistics show, all the studies we have show that immigrants commit fewer crimes than people that are born in the country. And that's the case in the United States, and that's the case virtually everywhere. And so a lot of this is really just a background of this is the stigmatization of immigrants. No stigmatization of immigrants from Latin America in particular. It plays really well with Trump's base. And so, you know, that is, I don't really see that there's a whole lot of U.S. interest here. There are some interests in Venezuelans that want to get back to democracy, and there's some geopolitical interests, but I think those could be treated in a quite different way.
Thank you, sir. Appreciate your time. 8:30, time for WWL First News. For that, we go to Ian Ozan. 8:46, 14 till 9, Tommy Tucker, WWL, on this foggy Monday morning, joined by Chelsea Singleton, an assistant professor and nutritional epidemiologist at Tulane. Good morning, Professor. How are you?
I'm doing great, Tommy. How are you?
I'm okay. Thanks for coming on. Tell me what a nutritional epidemiologist is, please.
I'd be happy to tell you what that is. Nutritional epidemiologist, well, an epidemiologist in general, you know, we are public health scholars. You know, we study determinants and distribution of disease in human populations. There are so many different types of epidemiologists. I'm a nutritional epidemiologist, so I specialize in diet-related diseases. So I have a strong interest in obesity. I have a strong interest in type 2 diabetes, hypertension, anything that or any outcome that can really be influenced by nutrition and diet. So that's what I research.
So how big of a problem is food insecurity in this country and in this area?
You know, we continue to have a major issue with food insecurity, and it's been a major topic of discussion in the news lately, mainly because of the government shutdown. But, you know, 14 million U.S. households still, are considered food insecure, and that's the most recent data we have from the USDA. And, you know, 1 in 5 children live in food insecure households, which is a major concern. And, you know, in the state of Louisiana, you know, has a food insecurity rate that's higher than the national average. So food insecurity is still a major issue in the country, and it's still a major topic of conversation among public health scholars, mainly because, you know, we have so many factors around us that are influencing food insecurity rates or putting people at higher risk of food insecurity, with the rising cost of living and so on and so forth. But yes, it's a major reality for many Americans across the country and many families in Louisiana.
Real quick, and we're going to talk about insecurity and crime after the break, but I wanted to get to overweight and undernourished. People don't realize that you can be overweight and undernourished. Explain that, please, if you can.
Yeah, that is true. We often call that the hunger obesity paradox. Mm-hmm. And we see that a lot in countries like America, and a lot of that has to do with the fact of our food supply. Our food supply in America, oftentimes unhealthier food items, fast food items, super ultra processed food items, they tend to be the cheaper things to get. You know, buying a, yeah, you know, they tend, yeah, that's true as well. You know, families can go to the grocery store and buy a lot of highly processed meals and foods for their family. That stuff will stretch longer than buying a lot of fresh produce or fresh items. And so you can be consuming these items and not receiving really good nutrient dense meals, and it can increase your risk of obesity, but you could still, you know, be experiencing food insecurity, so on and so forth. But yes, we do see that a lot in countries like America.
For people that don't know, Professor, how would you define food insecurity?
Yeah, that is a great question. But oftentimes, you know, we're really thinking about looking at a family, because we really measure that looking at households. We're really thinking about, do they have enough financial resources to be able to acquire food for everyone in their family, so everyone in their family can eat, they're not skipping meals, and they're able to do it in a dignified way. So that's what we really think about when we think of food insecurity. Households where they don't have the financial resources to acquire food, make it stretch across an entire pay period, have everybody in their household eat, they're not skipping meals. If they're having those issues, then they're experiencing food insecurity.
Let me take a break. We'll pick it up when we come back, because I want to talk specifically about how crime and food insecurity are linked, and Dr. Chelsea Singleton will help us when we come back, assistant professor and epidemiologist at Tulane, specifically a nutritional epidemiologist at Tulane. 8:51, 9 till 9, traffic, WWL. 8:57, 3 till 9, Tommy Tucker, WWL. Quickly back to Chelsea Singleton, an assistant professor and nutritional epidemiologist at Tulane. We're talking about food insecurity and how it can have links to, well, obviously poor health. You can be, what did you call it, doctor, the obesity?
Oh, I said the hunger-obesity
paradox. Hunger-obesity paradox, yeah. But let's talk about food insecurity and crime, how those two are related.
Yeah, there's a couple of different ways that, you know, we've been doing research to see that there's a connection. It's kind of sort of bidirectional. So there's been studies that show that when people don't have the financial resources they need to get food, it can increase crime in communities. So that's showing that, you know, food insecurity can lead to crime. And there's some great research around the SNAP program, Supplemental Nutrition Assistance Benefits, or we call food stamps. Mm-hmm. And we've seen that when food stamps are spent down and we're coming towards the end of that cycle, the end of that month where people don't have any SNAP benefits left over, it can increase crime. And there's also some studies that show that when we increase SNAP benefits, it can actually reduce crime, specifically property crimes like robbery, theft, specifically property crimes. But on the flip side, there's some research that shows that you know, people who are exposed to crime in their community, people who are, you know, regularly experience crime in their community, they're more likely to be food insecure. And we're still trying to figure out where that phenomenon comes from. Even when we account for low income status, we still see people who are often exposed to crime in their community being more food insecure. And a lot of that might have to do with the access to food resources in their community. So yes, there's definitely a connection there.
Generally speaking, hungry people does not make for a hungry country. And I'm talking about historically, right?
No, not necessarily.
Yeah, you understand what I'm saying? Well, I guess what I'm saying is hungry people have led to revolutions before. So hungry people do not make for a happy country in a lot of different ways, nor is it fair to people that they don't have enough to eat. I was trying to make my own statement in a different kind of way. But thank you, doctor. I appreciate your time.
Okay, thank you.
You bet. You have a good day. We'll take a break. We come back. We can talk to Eric Smith, a professor at Tulane's Institute of Energy, keeping olive green and blue, we love it. That's what it is, yeah. With Tulane, we'll talk about oil leases in the Gulf of Mexico. Then we're going to talk about homeowners and how much they're spending on housing-related costs. And we'll give you our survey results. So a lot coming up. Stay with us, WWL. It's a causeway closed in both directions. We'll let you know if anything changes on that. But the best thing, I guess, is just to put off your trip if you can, or go the Twin Spans, go the alternate routes. Or the South Shore, because that's closed as well, right? Both sides closed, causeway closed. All right, thank you. Eric Smith joins us now, professor at Tulane's Institute of Energy, to talk about the first lease sale in the Gulf of Mexico in about 2 years that's about to open up. Good morning, professor. How are you?
Good morning. How are you doing?
I'm all right, sir. Let's talk about that. Why has it been so long?
Because President Biden didn't want us to drill for oil and gas in the Gulf of Mexico.
All right, and that's changed. So what is the process like?
Well, we've always had a fairly organized system for these leases. What the big debate has been about the schedule of how often, and then the second issue has been about what properties were going to be open for leasing at any given point in time. And that's important because there's like 80 million acres out there, so it's kind of hard to analyze everything every year to do it. And historically, what we did was we would go in and nominate areas that the companies were interested in and say, if you would lease this to us, we'll spend the money to do the research and check it out. That kind of went by the wayside, and governments, both Republican and Democrat, seem to prefer the idea of leasing everything every year, which fragmented the bidding quite a bit. And obviously, a lot of stuff didn't receive any bids. So,
how do they even go about?
The next one comes out.
I'm sorry. Go ahead, Professor.
I say we'll see how the next version comes out. The other thing that's going on nationally is that the government's putting more stress on reopening Alaska to drilling. So that's a kind of a new card in the game.
Do we have any idea how much oil remains? How do they even go about dividing up the Gulf into sections?
Well, they're on a sort of a 9-square-mile grid, and there's thousands of them. And, of course, they don't exactly match where we think oil and gas is. So the government starts out with its own research, and then it also has access to all of the seismic that's shot by the oil companies themselves. So they have a pretty good idea in general terms about where oil might be. These days, most of the focus is on the deep water oil and gas.
What type of oil?
It's generally fairly sweet and medium to light, I would say. There's not much heavy oil in the Gulf of Mexico, which is the heavy sour crude you hear people talking about that we need to run our refineries if they're going to make a lot of diesel. We have to import that crude, and we still do import it.
So the heavy sour crude that we need to import is not under the waters of the Gulf, right? That our refineries use. That's what we go through every time, correct, Professor? I think the professor dropped out. So let me do this. Let's take a break. We come back. The causeway is set to reopen within 10 minutes, I think. We'll either talk to Carlton Dufresneau or Professor Eric Smith when we come back and get you the latest. One way or the other, we'll give you the info you need here on WWL. It's 9:15. All right, 9:20. Let me tell you what matters to you. We had Jason Shields with Gulf Coast Bank and Trust on earlier talking about title theft when it comes to your property, and you can go to eClerks, eClerksla.com, and you can sign up for eClerks Alert where you'll know if anything like that goes on. There are some problems on the causeway. Carlton Dufresneau joins us now to talk about that. Good morning, Carlton. How are you? Carlton, do you have me muted, perhaps?
Whoops. Tom, can you hear me? Hello?
There you go.
Hello?
Yeah. Hey, there we go.
I'm sorry.
That's right. How you? You're busy. How you doing? What's up with the causeway?
Every day.
Hang on one second, Carlton. I will remind our listeners that we'll continue our conversation with Professor Eric Smith at Tulane's Institute of Energy about oil leasing in the Gulf after we talk about the causeway, because people need to get to and from where they're going. So with that being said, good morning, Carlton. What's going on the causeway?
Unfortunately, we had a crash about 20 minutes ago southbound. Everybody's okay. It was a 3-car crash about the 11-mile marker. That's cleared, but what's happened in the past, we're getting ready to open up, and we had visibilities drop down just in the last 5 minutes under 200 feet on both bridges closer to the South Shore. So both bridges are closed right now. We're watching it closely, Tom. We hope to be open again by 10 o'clock. The weather services, we should clear up really shortly, but it's still out there, and the temperature, water temperature and the air temperature are right there. So short story is, I'm sorry, folks, just be patient. We're going to open up as soon as we can.
So maybe by 10 o'clock would be
the
earliest.
That's the ETA right now. It could be earlier. Just need a little wind, a little more sunshine.
All right, so there you go. Causeway closed both directions. Had an accident earlier. Fog moved in. Carlton will let us know as soon as it opens, and we will let you know. Until then, patience for everyone, please.
Will do. Thank you, buddy.
You bet. Thank you, Carlton. You too. Now back to Eric Smith, professor at Tulane's Institute of Energy, whose phone went out before. Probably OPEC jamming the signal, professor, you think?
I think so. I don't know. Maybe it's just bureaucracy. Who knows?
Who knows what it could be? So when it comes to leases in the Gulf, this whole thing always fascinated me. Because, first of all, they're bidding blind, or is there any kind of satellite research, as stupid as that may seem, maybe it's not stupid, to tell where there may be oil and where there isn't?
Yeah, there's seismic that's been shot, area-wide seismic, and it's not as detailed as you might like to make the kind of decisions in terms of bidding bonuses that you're willing to put up. But companies supplement that data with, custom data that they've shot on areas they're particularly interested in, which is why we get back to this issue about why are we thinking that people are going to bid on land they haven't been able to do any research on to nominate it to begin with.
They have not done any of those shots you're talking about on this or
no? They've done them on the ones they're interested in. They just don't know whether those are the ones the government will put up for bid or not. So it's a crapshoot.
So when do they find out? Who does what first? Does the government say these areas, these quadrants of the Gulf are open for you to bid on? Or do the oil companies say we're interested in these quadrants? And then the government says, okay, if you do, it's going to cost X amount. I'm just wondering about that whole process.
It's a good question. And the short answer is both. Historically, we did it the second way, where the companies nominated the property they wanted to bid on. And now we tend to say, no, we're going to let you bid on everything that's not already leased. And companies, still can pick and choose which ones they want to bid on. They're not forced to bid on anything. But the headlines look better when you say we've got 80 million acres for lease instead of 20 or 10, which is generally what they end up with, is a much smaller share of the stuff that's put up for lease actually receives bids. And then many of those just receive a single bid.
So how far out do they go in the Gulf, into the Gulf?
That's another good question. And they go out 200 miles and they are limited, at least off of Louisiana, to a 3-mile limit from shore. That belongs to the state leasing authorities. But the land beyond 3 miles and short of 200 miles is all federal territory.
And 200 miles because of the geographical boundary, or because that's where it becomes, that's all you can use a pipeline for?
No, it's neither one of those. It's basically a...
None of the above. Let me throw that in.
Say again?
None of the above. Let me throw that in.
Okay. What it is it's 200 miles is the exclusive economic zone of the United States, as it is for any country that's got a maritime border.
I got you. That's what I was kind of trying to say in my own clumsy way. So what is this ultimately? How do you see this playing out for energy supplies for Louisiana? Is this a big deal, or is this just like a shoo-shoo?
No, this is a big deal. It's still a couple of million barrels of oil a day that are produced out of the Gulf. It's generally high-quality oil. And as you know, Louisiana doesn't produce much oil on its own anymore. So if we're going to keep all these refineries going, we want as much oil as close as we can get to having it in our backyard, which is, the story of the Gulf of Mexico. It is the Gulf. 85% of what's ever been leased in the Gulf is south of Louisiana.
Really?
Yeah.
Wow. So, but for the royalties, we could have done a lot. The royalty deal, we could have done a lot better than we did, right?
Well, Gomez is the most recent deal that we had done. Led to work through the police podcast. I'm sorry about that.
That's all right. You got a university job. I understand that. This is your second thing. Go ahead.
Under Gomesa, which was really formulated by Mary Landrieu when she was senator, mm-hmm. we got a cut, a disproportionate cut, if you will, of the revenues that the federal government received from leasing all of this property. And it was staged over time at Branford. 15 years or whatever it was, and it has now run out. But for those periods, a lot of the money that we got to do flood control with and to rebuild levees and all of that was money that essentially the feds had collected from the leasing offshore. So we don't have any oil in Louisiana anymore. We have a lot of gas, but we don't have much oil.
I remember you said...
Well, we do need, we get mostly from the Gulf or from Texas.
And I remember
heavy oil, because nobody else has it in the U.S. So.
I'm sorry, Professor, I didn't mean to interrupt you. Go ahead.
We import heavy oil because our refineries were built to run on heavy oil. And as a result, that's the way we get our production.
So what... about the economics of retooling factory or refineries? Can you retool a refinery, or would you have to rebuild it from the beginning so that we would not have to import any of that other oil from anywhere else and we would become able to produce our own oil to make our own gasoline? Am I close there?
Well, we could rebuild the refineries. The refineries can still run on light oil. That's not the problem. The problem is we have a lot of, maybe 50% of the equipment that's installed is to process the heavy oil, which takes additional processing, but gives you a higher yield of the heavier products like fuel oil and diesel. Mm-hmm. And we do export a lot of diesel, both conventional diesel as well as renewable diesel for California.
Is this
that answers the question?
It does.
We're a net importer of heavy oil because we don't have any.
So if we were to make the decision to retool these factories, could we become completely energy efficient, at least as it relates to gasoline, or because of the international nature of who owns the refineries, they would have no interest in doing that?
No, they have an interest in doing it, but it's a an evolutionary thing. It took us 100 years to get the refineries the way they are today. Mm-hmm. We started out with refineries, ironically, that could only process light sweet crude. And then as we built up the demand for diesel, we started using what heavy oil we had available, including some from Texas, a little bit from the Gulf. The Keystone XL pipeline, you remember, was to bring Canadian heavy oil down. We still bring some of that down, but by rail, not by pipeline, because of the the earlier administrations not wanting or changing their mind. Every time we changed administration, the deal was on again or off again until the Canadians said they refused to finance it.
So when it comes to horizontal drilling in the Gulf, mm-hmm. I always was confused about that because it seems like if you got mineral rights on your property, maybe you don't because somebody else, there's no wall between the oil deposit underground between your property or somebody else's, right? How does all of that work scientifically?
Well, first of all, we don't do a lot of horizontal drilling in the Gulf of Mexico. Horizontal drilling is mostly an onshore activity.
And the reason for that is?
And the reason is because the source rock for the oil as it's, percolating up over the millions of years, mm-hmm. is actually coming from shales that are buried deeply. And then the oil, lighter than water, comes up through the surface until it hits porous sandstone, which has another layer of shale on top of it. So it forms a trap. And that's the typical reserve that we drill into in the Gulf. What you see in terms of shale plays are almost all in Texas. Our big one is the Haynesville up in northwest Louisiana, a little bit in Arkansas, a little bit in Texas. And that's all gas, pure gas. It comes out of the ground, and you can use it in pipelines. It's really good gas. The oil shale tends to be in places like the Permian Basin in Texas and the Eagle Ford in Texas and a little bit in the Utica Shale up in Ohio. So those are where the shale oils come from that has grown so quickly in terms of U.S. productions to where we went from being big importers of all kinds of oil and gas to being exporters of both. And in fact, we're the largest exporter of both. So that is it. The shale play has been dominant in terms of increasing our oil production. But the Gulf of Mexico still produces the same amount of oil it produced 20 years ago.
So I remember you telling me that all of the easy oil they've already gotten, right? And that's why there's not as that in during the oil boom. Correct me if I'm wrong here, Professor, because I don't want to hurt myself. But that they during the 80s in the oil boom, the easy oil was there, and that's why everything was booming. But then they got all the oil that was quote easy to get, and that led to the oil bust. What led to the oil bust? Refresh my memory on this. I'm trying to figure this out.
Well, as you were saying. So eloquently, we ran out of the easy-to-produce oil.
Okay.
And in areas like the Permian Basin, the Hackberry Shale, the Hackberry oil field at south of Lake Charles was a major, major producer during World War II. It's completely dormant at this point. In fact, we're thinking about using that site as our first Class 6 injection well for CO2, but okay. Another story.
Mm-hmm.
So we basically ran out of, and by easy, that's shorthand for saying
cheap.
Shallow water.
Or cheap, right?
It's always easier to drill on land and then in shallow water, and it's a lot easier to drill in shallow water than in deep water.
Okay.
And we have largely exhausted the oil in shallow water. So now all of the oil that we produce in the Gulf is basically coming from the deep water, and it's expensive to get to. There's a lot of it. We don't use the horizontal drilling because we've got plenty of porosity and the oil flows easily because of the higher pressures. So we don't really need to use these extended length horizontal drilling techniques, which are expensive, incidentally, as well. So we're getting the hard to get oil in deeper water, and we're getting enough of it that it can be justified by the prices that we can earn today. But all of that oil is going to be relatively light, relatively sweet, so we're not fully optimizing our refinery capacity.
We need to import that oil in order
to optimize the refinery.
Would it be accurate to presume the deeper the water, the more the deposits of oil, or not necessarily?
I think it's, that's another good question, and I can't really come up with a simple answer to it. But the essence is we are producing the oil successfully in deep water and are able to maintain the output that we've been able to establish over the years. Our one big local company in terms of that is LLOG, which is actually over in Covington on the other side of that causeway you were worried about.
Oh, by the way, let me remind people, it is closed. Thank you, Professor, for that. The causeway is closed and will be, they're saying, until maybe about 10 o'clock. Causeway is closed in both directions. Continue, please.
So at any rate, that company, private company, no public stock available or anything like that, but it is like the fourth largest independent in the country right now. And it is all deep water oil. So they can successfully drill and produce that oil, but it is not cheap to do that.
One more quick question. When it comes to OPEC and oil futures and the price of oil, again, I always ask you this, but it seems as though it's all at the behest of OPEC and what they decide to do. So to speculate on the price of oil, you would have to guess what's on the mind of OPEC, or can you read the market conditions beyond that?
Well, I think we can obviously impact that. OPEC has some of the least expensive oil around to produce, since most of it's onshore. And Saudi Arabia is the leader of that pack. They are generally pretty responsible people. We don't like to think of it that way, but they recognize that if they produce more than the world needs, the price is going to go down. Sometimes they've used that as a weapon to try and blunt U.S. interest in these higher cost producing systems like deep water and shale onshore. But in general, they are, you know, they're running a group. In fact, their economists are run by a former head of the U.S. EIA, a fellow named Adam Zeminski. Very Arabic sounding name, I recognize. But at any rate, Adam is did his duty as the head of the Energy Information Administration here in the U.S. and then went to work for the Saudis.
Professor, I appreciate your time. I really do. I hope you have a good day, and thanks as always.
Anytime.
Appreciate your patience. All right. Eric Smith, professor at Tulane's Institute of Energy. Causeway closed in both directions. 9:37, 23 till 10. Here with more traffic is Joe Cardosi. I-946, 14 till 10, causeway closed in both directions due to some fog that rolled in. As soon as it opens, we will let you know. Ali Bustamante joins us now, our friend, professor in the Department of Economics and Finance at my alma mater, UNO. Good morning, sir. How are you?
Good morning. Great. Thank you so much for having me.
Do you know what's the deal with LSUNO? Are they going to change it? I don't want to bring you into an area where you're not comfortable. I was just curious as to what the latest is as an alum.
Well, you know, what we know is, I think what you all know, which is, you know, come July 1st, we're going to be part of the LSU system. And so far, it looks like we're going to be LSU in New Orleans.
So color changes, or you don't know?
Oh, yeah, I think so. Yeah.
Purple, gold, no more blue and silver.
I think so. I think we're going to be purple, gold. Yeah, that's basically what they released at their rollout meeting a couple of weeks ago.
Yeah, you know what that inspired me to do, Professor? This has nothing to do with what you were invited on to talk about. But I gave my kid my college class ring when high school started and said, this indicates you can have this. This indicates I'm through doing homework. I'll never do homework again. You're on your own. And the ring was promptly lost. But I'm going to get another ring, and I'm going to get it blue, silver and blue, just so I can have it. That is nothing to do with anything, but I just like those old colors. Let's talk about, you know, they always talk about it's not how much you make, and I think UNO did build the middle class of New Orleans, as Clancy Dubose says, but it's about how much it costs to live where you live, and unfortunately, sometimes people think it's cheap to live in New Orleans, and it's not, is it?
Absolutely not. You know, one of the things that folks have to keep in mind is that when you look at home values, you know, typically we're below the national average. Right now it's about, you know, the median home value is about $305,000 worth versus $360,000 nationally. But that's just the home value itself. What we know is that housing costs have been increasing drastically when you consider things like home insurance rates, utility costs, and just even just the rather cost of living here in New Orleans broadly has just really grown drastically over the past few years.
So what is driving all of that? Is it just the insurance, or is it inflation? What? Tell me.
Well, it's a little bit of both. You know, you're getting hit from a lot of different places. You know, over the year, housing costs have increased about 2%. Now they're about 13.6% above the national average. That's really, you know, the main drivers there, as we kind of mentioned, home insurance rates, utility costs. You know, when we know that our homes are not the highest valued in the country, but we do know that it's getting a lot more expensive here over the years. And when you compare that with what's happening with inflation, it's just, you know, 3% over the year. Now, the median household income here in New Orleans is about $62,000, and that is just not increasing at any near rate the higher living costs that we're facing.
I guess I'm just trying to figure out if jobs aren't increasing. They're not, are they?
Not at all, actually. And so this is where, you know, when we actually look at the housing costs versus the actual incomes that folks are earning over the past 20 years, we basically have been losing ground on income relative to housing costs. And that's not just here in New Orleans. That's, you know, happening broadly nationally, but it's happening a lot worse here.
Well, the top four percentage of median income spent on housing costs for homeowners with a mortgage: Hialeah, Florida, which I guess that's because of the scarcity of real estate, or because the real estate is so expensive there?
Well, a big part of it is, I'm actually originally from Miami, Florida.
Okay.
And I've been here in New Orleans for over 11 years. But one of the reasons why Hialeah is up there is just because you're facing the high Miami cost of living, but at the same time, Hialeah is really, you know, largely where a lot of low-income folks live. So you're really getting, again, that
service,
same squeeze that we're getting here as
the
well.
The service, yeah, part of the Miami?
Absolutely, yes.
Okay. New York? Tell me why it's so high in New York.
And that one is actually, you know, you look at New York and you obviously see these high incomes, concentration of incomes. But over there, what's really largely fueling that is just a massive rise in property values that we've seen over the past few years.
And then you have New Orleans at number three and then L.A. fourth. And L.A. would be why?
It's very much the similar context of New York, where, again, you know, it's less so in terms of the high incomes, but really just the massive rise in property values that we've seen over the past. But this is where New Orleans is. Again, it's we're kind of a little bit in a different scenario than the other three cases, which is we're not seeing these massive rise in property values. It's really just the rise in the cost of living really squeezing our already relatively low incomes.
So the high cost of living nationally is squeezed and the income's not going up. So as a result, people are getting, that's where the term house poor comes in, I guess, because they have a fixed, for the most part, mortgage rate, but everything else is costing more. So they have less to spend, considering they still have this big house note they have to pay. Am I close to anything there?
No, you're absolutely right there. And, you know, and we're seeing already the consequences of this, right? I mean, obviously not just the outward migration, but when you look at just the way that folks are trying to make ends meet, we're seeing credit card balances increase about 6% from last year, and we're seeing a lot of delinquencies rise behind that as well.
What's the outlook here, Professor? What's going to change anything?
You know, I think, you know, there's two pieces, obviously, that we know. One of them is, you know, the just really staying on track and really pushing forward any kind of help we can get really with, you know, utility costs, with insurance costs. We know that there's, a lot that both local and state government can do to really support folks. And that's going to be, just a real part of just like really undoing these harms that we've been facing over the past. And now in terms of the income side, that is just really about, you know, how can we just, you know, diversify our economy, really make sure that we're getting, again, not just job growth, but good job growth.
Because there's not going to be any more land available in this area for expansion, right?
Well, you know, I always like to say, you know, we've had twice the population that we have now. So we know that we have the land to really capitalize on. It's just a matter of utilizing it the right way.
Thank you, Professor. Appreciate your time as always. Ali Bustamante, Professor in the Department of
Economics and Finance.
I didn't have the right glasses on. Economics and Finance at my alma mater, you know. Thank you, sir. 9:52, Causeway closed both directions. Back in a flash on WWL.
Listen up, football fans. You won't want to miss this.
Right now, new Bet365 customers bet $5 and get $200 in bonus bets, win or lose. So you could turn that $200 into something bigger when you bet on Moneyline, Spread, Totals, Player Props.
$200 in bonus bets when new customers bet $5. I know where I'm going to bet from now on. Download the app today and see why it's never ordinary at Bet365. Gambling problem? Call 1-800-GAMBLER. 21 plus only. Must be physically located in Ohio. T&Cs apply. In app only.
This episode is brought to you by Progressive Insurance. Whether you love true crime or comedy, celebrity interviews or news, you call the shots on what's in your podcast queue. And guess what? Now you can call them on your auto insurance too with the Name Your Price tool from Progressive. It works just the way it sounds. You tell Progressive how much you want to pay for car insurance, and they'll show you coverage options that fit your budget. Get your quote today at progressive.com to join the over 28 million drivers who trust Progressive. Progressive Casualty Insurance Company and Affiliates. Price and coverage match limited by state law.
Honestly, I wasn't sure we could pull this off ourselves.
You had the vision, and Blinds.com brought your dreams to life.
Yeah, their custom window treatments and free design consultation. Total game changer. Ava walked us through everything. Styles, colors, what would work best in this space.
And we didn't have to leave the house. Free samples showed up fast, and they made it super easy to compare and choose.
Right? Plus, no high-pressure sales pitch, just smart guidance. And the install? I thought it'd be tricky, but Blinds.com instructions were clear. Everything fits perfectly.
And thanks to their SureFit guarantee, if something doesn't fit, they remake it for free. Talk about peace of mind.
And it costs way less than having a designer to our house or going to one of those overpriced showrooms.
We saved money, got the exact look we wanted, and we did it ourselves.
We did it.
So, kitchen windows next?
Blinds.com makes buying and installing window treatments easy and affordable because nobody covers windows better than Blinds.com. Black Friday deals are going on all month long. Save up to 45% off site-wide plus an additional 10% off every order at Blinds.com. Rules and restrictions apply.
Think advertising on TikTok isn't for your business? Think again.
We've generated over 100,000 leads, which has converted into over 40,000 sales for our pet insurance policies. My name is Trey Farrow. I am the CEO of Spot Pet Insurance. TikTok's Smart Plus AI-powered automation takes the guesswork out of targeting, bidding, and optimizing creative. If I can advertise on TikTok, you can too.
Drive more leads and scale your business today, only on TikTok. Head over to getstarted.tiktok.com/TikTok ads.
I'm caught up in the game. My attention is on every play and every whistle. But what I'm missing is a signal coming from my kidneys. That signal isn't like a ref's whistle. It's more of a silent SOS, which could be warning me of an increased risk for events like heart attack or stroke. And a way I can catch that signal? A simple urine test called UACR. If you have type 2 diabetes or high blood pressure, talk to your doctor about the UACR test. Detect the SOS. Visit detecttheSOS.com to learn more.